Welcome to the latest episode of Shut Up and Ride. Denny's laughing because she is taking a back seat and I'm taking the lead, and Ben's going to join me as well with the lead sometimes, aren't you, Ben? Help me out here.
Hi, my name's Ben Atkinson and welcome to Shut Up and Ride. Today, me and Simon are going to be interviewing Jenny.
Shut Up and Ride, the podcast when you can come and talk anything horse with Liberty Trainer Ben Atkinson and professional talker Jenny Rudel, who is world-renowned presenter, producer and director.
I think not world-renowned. I think that's a little bit of an exaggeration.
I think you'll find that, yes, you are. You've done loads around Europe. You've done loads in America. Where have you not? Maybe Australia.
No, but I am in Australia. There's some of the shows I've done are in Australia. So,
don't put yourself down. Anyway, yes. So we are talking everything Jenny. We've done a Ben pod, a Sci pod. Now we're doing the Jen pod.
The Sci pod actually sounds like we didn't call it that at the time. Sci-fi pod.
The sci-fi pod. So, Jenny, we're going to start by, you don't like going right back, do you? Talking childhood and all that kind of thing, do you?
I don't know what to say. I don't like this. I'm feeling very awkward right now. I don't like being asked questions. Can we just ask each other how our day was, and then I can expertly, field this away from any questions directed at me?
Well, you can try if you like, but it ain't happening.
I know, but did you see Ben's news in the last pod? Because you weren't in it.
See Ben's news. We already had a very brief conversation about how exciting that is.
It's so exciting.
And we were going to see what sex it is and all that kind of stuff, which is very, very exciting.
Oh, are you finding out the flavour, Ben?
Yeah, absolutely. Just so that I need to decorate, I need to buy clothes, I need to, yeah.
He's got to have it right.
I need to be ready. I need to pick a name. Do you know? Need that planning time.
And I also, like the surprise.
I'm a little bit... I'm diagnosed dyslexic, but I think there's some other stuff in there as well. And I really struggle with change and stuff like that. So I feel like the more I know, the more prepared I can be, the smoother that transition will go. Yeah, I think.
I like it. I liked the surprise because I was like, this is going to hurt. I don't want to hate them before I've met them.
Have you ever I was going to say, segueing quickly back to the Gen Pod, has that ever happened? Have you ever been told, you know, you've got to make a show with this person or you've got to interview this person, whatever, and you're thinking, holy crap, they make my skin crawl and I do not want to do this?
That's probably us, isn't it?
Oh, that's tough, because I obviously can't say any names.
Why not? Come on, don't be boring.
Because this problem is, the horse world, as you know, is rife with rumours and bitchiness. And so there's a lot of stuff I know about riders from other riders that I don't know is true or not. So it's very hard to sometimes go in with filming with a famous rider knowing something about them that may or not be true or you know is true. And you have to push it to one side. I honestly try and take everybody on how they treat me on face value, no matter what I've been told about them. There is a few riders, I have to say, that turn it on for the media. And the moment that camera's off, it's like you don't exist. And that's quite awkward when you're on their yard. Simon Grieve. No, I'm joking. But there's probably one rider that makes my skin crawl, but I would never say who it is. And luckily, I've not had to work with them. They really give me the creeps, like the Wibblies. And I've had to interview them because they've won some stuff. And I've just been like, I just really don't like you. And I've been told stuff about them.
Male or female?
Male. But at the same time as well, I don't know, there's just something really odd about them. I would never divulge who it is. But that's more of a personal thing for me. Like, they just give me the Wibblies. And then any rider that I see being mean to a horse or riding in a way I don't like, that immediately puts me on a back foot. So I put them on I only interview if I really have to list then. So if I can bypass them, I will, in my head.
Have you ever, declined an offer? I'm not sure people will fully understand, because sometimes your job is being the person either on the telly talking about the horses or at the event talking about what's going on. And other times you're producing content, which is like we have together when you've organized the stuff we've done for Horse and Country. But would you ever get asked to do a show with someone or something and be like, why don't we do this instead? And like, how is that? How's navigating, changing, constructing a TV show or a series and sort of the challenges that come with that?
So I would say like 90% of my work is producing and directing. Most people just think I stand, because what you see is the microphone, isn't it? Like standing there. Trying to look pretty, used to look pretty, then pushed out some humans, don't look so pretty anymore. So most people, because that's what they see, that's what they think you do. Whereas actually, before you even get in front of the camera, you've done all your research, you've probably decided who you're going to talk to and done all the producing up to that, and sometimes even turned the camera on. But then I get like ideas for shows, and often we get sponsors or whoever's paying for the show thinks, oh, let's use that rider or that celebrity. And you know that they're going to be, sometimes some people are really famous, but they're useless on camera. Some riders are just not good. Some riders are really difficult to work with. Some are lesser known, but are brilliant. And I would rather give a leg up to someone on camera that is kind of going to be brilliant and educational or funny or whatever, and might be lesser known, because I think the end product is better than just relying on someone's status to make the show good. So yeah, I have often swerved people away from certain riders that I know have been tricky to work with or really boring. Like the end result is just really flat, no matter how good the idea is. If the rider's not going to pull it off, it can be really flat, especially some dressage-y stuff. Like it's not always best to work with the top guys, because it's sometimes can be just like, ugh.
And have you ever had somebody that has really surprised you in a good way? I mean, like you're expecting them to not be that great, but actually they turn out to be like gold.
Do you know who I'd never worked with and who I went to watch, who you know, both know? I had no expectations because I'd just known him from watching him ride dressage tests. Is Gareth Hughes. I just honestly think the way he explains stuff is unbelievable. So I'm like, oh, I've watched one person teach how to do a fly and change. I've watched 1,000. But I think Gareth Hughes is just every time I learn something in a different way. And he has a way of explaining stuff that really anyone can learn from. So I think he was a real shock in the fact that for my level of dressage, I just learned so much. I think he was the biggest shock. I don't want it to make it sound shocking that
I was just going to say, I massively agree with you on that, because obviously you organised, we did that, the Lights, Camera, Atkinson together, and you organised for me to have those lessons with Gareth. And I think that genuinely was some of the best lessons I've had in my life. Like, he was amazing.
And then, oh, she won't mind me saying, Lucinda Green, right? The woman's a genius. Best instructor I've ever had cross country, so no offence, Simon. Awkward. But my God, filming her sometimes, she starts like, because she is all about the horse. She does not care if it takes 40 hours and everybody has to work through the night, as long as that horse has a good experience. Which means if you've got only 2 hours to film with her and a certain amount of content, and she takes 2 hours at the water fence, you just got to fucking roll with it. And she's off. We'll be like, right, we're just going to jump around these fences. And she'll in her head go, well, that's not right for the horse. So she'll fuck off to a fence she knows is there, 4 miles away. I'm having to convince very angry camera crew to follow her because the jump's bloody miles away. And she then will start reversing and she'll be behind the camera. I'm like, Lucinda, the whole point is for you to be in front of the camera. But when you're filming, it's not about the filming for her. It's about the horse having a good experience and the rider. So that, God love her. She's made a few shoots quite tricky, but the end result is always gold. So you just don't care, because anything that comes out of that woman's mouth is just absolutely brilliant. And I massively respect her for that. She's not there trying to make herself look good. She just wants the horses to go well. So that is just, but by God, it's stressful.
She's just a wonderful human, isn't she, in general? It's not just with the horses. She's a very kind soul and she wants the best for everyone. The horses and the people as well. And I just think she's fantastic.
And at the end of a shoot as well, so it's a very lonely job, because you spend your whole life bigging up your riders or saying like, well done, camera crew, are you okay? Horses, are you okay? Rider, are you okay? Talent, are you okay? And at the end of the day, you're exhausted. And Lucinda's one of the only people I've ever filmed with who comes up at the end of the day and goes, she told me once that I did such a good job, she thought I was better than Claire Balding. I nearly fucking cried. She obviously didn't mean it. No one's better than Claire Balding. But the fact she could just see I was exhausted from 4 days of filming, and she made the effort to come and find me and say what a good job I'd done. Because I was presenting and producing in one show with her. And I just thought, you didn't have to do that. Like, she's just brilliant. I love her.
And do you find that the work that you do and dealing with such good riders and learning all these different things and doing all these different kind of clinics and covering all that kind of stuff, does it inspire you to do more riding, or does it inspire you to work more and be doing more directing?
No, well, I want to ride.
You want to ride?
I hate it. I just want to ride. But I don't have any money, so I watch you guys do it instead.
And is that what you've always wanted to do? Got the screwdriver again.
No, why have you got a screwdriver every time? No, anyone, you funny. Can't see this, but Simon always has a screwdriver, which he likes to make a good point with. This is boring. No one wants to know what I wanted to do with my life, I promise you. They want to know what you two wanted to do with your life.
Yeah, but this is the Gem Pod, so come on.
Okay, well, if they haven't tuned out by now, I wanted to be like a David Attenborough. I wanted to just study animals and talk about them. But when I did my degree in zoology or biology, but basically you do know plants, there's nothing to do with zoos. It's the most misnamed bloody course in the world, which is very disappointing, by the way. I'd love to spend all my time in a zoo. Most people, when you do that degree, if you're going to work in research and or for the natural history unit or any of these big things, you have to do work experience. Like, you can't not do work experience. And I just didn't have any money to go and work for free. So I couldn't do work experience. So I ended up working as a doorman in a nightclub and security in the Oceanography Centre in Southampton.
And you see, you'd scare me, a security.
I'm a fully qualified door person. I have done my doorman exam.
Best thing.
Yeah, I sat in a room with 30 massive men. I finished, I did a week of training, learned things like, you get out like Coke cans and they're like, what's this Coke can for? And all the men are like, you could break it in half and use it as a weapon and slash someone's throat. And I was like, pass it here.
Really?
Yeah. And I said, can you pass the Coke can here? And it was a clever Coke can. So if you unscrewed it, but the wrong way, the top came off so you could smuggle drugs in to clubs with it.
Okay.
Stuff like that. Yeah. I know Ben's looking really shocked. So yeah, and then I had to do an exam. I finished it in like 20 minutes and I was the first one out while half of the men were still chewing their pens, working out which way to use it. So yeah, it was a way to earn more money because it was quadruple the pay of working behind the bar.
How long were you a doorman?
Four years.
Did you have a
door person? Yeah.
Door person? Like, you referred to yourself as a doorman. I was using your...
Yeah. Well, I was just, I only had boys. Like, you should see some of the boys that came to my wedding. There's some very big chaps, and my husband is not big. He was like, oh, Jesus Christ, your fens are enormous.
So, did you have to get anyone in a headlock and, like, you know, escort them out?
I can't get them in headlocks. You're not trained to do anything physical because, in case it goes wrong, you can then sue people. But I did, like, you can imagine. So, I've got my earpiece in. And a lot of people try and hit you and do whatever. Girls are the worst. They're scrappy. But if someone tries to hit you and I call on my radio, you've never seen five giant humans move so quickly to protect their one female member of staff. So the club I worked in, there was a back passage where you came out for a fire escape. Many a man's head has been used to open those fire escape doors when they were ejected after trying to hurt me. Yeah. And there was a very dark back alley, which a few ended up down there. And then things like, I was standing at the end of the bar once and one guy was really drunk and he was trying to climb over the bar. And I was like, mate, come on, just get down. So he went to punch me, but he was so drunk, it was very easy to miss the punch. And he fell over. And I was like, he's huge. I cannot stop this guy from getting up. But then I saw a little tiny bit of his boxer shorts was sticking out. So I put my foot on his ass and grabbed his boxer shorts and gave the man the biggest wedgie I've ever given anyone. I just held him there in like, he was in agony until my guys turned up because that was the only thing I could think of to do to hold this guy down.
Oh my goodness.
And how has this helped you? Is it going forward in your career?
I could do like traffic control at Burley or something if I really wanted to get entry.
It just means that if we're all at an event, Simon, we can send Jen to get the bar. She'll be able to get through everyone and get their drinks while we're being too polite and scared.
And then one of my favourite things to do, I used to glue pound coins to the floor. Do you know how much fun it is wasting away the hours watching drunk people try to pick a pound coin off the floor that's glued to the floor? It is hours of fun.
How do you go from sticking pound coins on the floor and having punch-ups in an alley? You went after zoology because you thought it involved animals. It turned out horrific.
No, well, I knew what I was getting myself. I wanted to be a vet, and then I worked in my aunt's vet's practice for years. And I just remember one day a collie coming in, like your James's, your partner's dogs, you know, the sheepdog collies.
Yeah.
And it was 6 months old and it had bitten someone. And these people had this dog in a flat and it was just excited and it had just jumped up and bitten a guy in the balls. And they were like, well, the next thing is it's going to bite a kid. And this dog wasn't walked. It was awful. And we had to put it to sleep because that's what the owner wanted. And I was like, I can't do this. This is not. And my aunt was like, yeah, it's just the job. I was like, I cannot, because of people's stupidity, spend my life fixing animals or putting animals to sleep because people are dickheads. So I was like, well, I'd rather study them and do that. So that's why I took that route. And I love David Attenborough.
So at which point did you decide? I'm so confused. So we want to be a vet. We like horses and we want to be a vet. Then we decide that being a vet's a bit depressing. So we sack that off a bit. And then we go to being a bouncer. Which point was it that you just wanted to work in the horse industry? Or was it more like the film, TV production side of it that sort of pulled
you in? It was all animals. Everything was always animals. But then I was, after I finished uni, I was living in Southampton being a doorman. And working as a security guard, I was a terrible security guard. I used to just find bits where I knew the cameras couldn't see me and I just go to sleep. It's a really bad security guard. And then one day, a friend of mine employed me to help with his sports tour company that he created, Sports Executive Travel, my friend Sam. And so I was traveling down to London to go meet him and someone had left a horse and hound on the train. And I'd ridden growing up and stuff. Just like other people's horses and things. And I found a horse and hound and I opened the back and saw an advert for a job in Ireland, which said in Curraghcloe outside Wexford, and it said, come and train, you get paid for doing your British Horse Society exams. And it was on a beach in Ireland, like never even heard of the place. So I was like, sod it. So I just messaged them, email. I don't think it was even email that day. I think I would have had to ring them. So I rang and literally the next week, I got on a boat and went over, hadn't ridden in 6 years and had to ride 4 horses in one day and then rode another 2 the next day. Then I came back and had to be on the door that evening and I sat on my doorman stool doing the till and I couldn't even close my legs. They were so sore because I hadn't ridden for so long. But yeah, so I had to go down and they just wanted to see me ride. On the way there, I'd found my old BHS book and I was looking up what a trot diagonal was. Because I couldn't remember. And they were like, yeah, you can start at the end of the summer. So I then just moved to Ireland and got my AI in 9 months. And the quicker you got your exams, the more you got paid. You were on like £30 a week and you got your accommodation, which was disgusting. And then the better you got, the better horses you got to ride. And then it was a place where they had training horses, competition horses and breeding youngsters. So then I very quickly learned how to back and break. And just said, yeah, I know how to muck out. No idea. So the next day I was like, so how do you do your stables? She was like, oh, I do them like this. I was like, okay, now I know how to muck out. First day, mucked out 9 stables, thought I was going to be sick. I never mucked out. I'd never done anything. And she was like, the boss on the first day was like, I'm going to have a day off tomorrow. Are you all right to leg Blaine up on this new one we've just started, Malteser? She's only been sat on a couple of times. I was like, yeah, I'm sure I am. I was like, legged him up, had no clue, led around. I was like, should we just go for a walk then? Walked around and Christy was like, that pony has never left the round pen. What the fuck are you doing? I was like, oh, I seem fine. So yes, it was a very quick learning curve in Ireland. Basically just learn.
So then we went from Ireland and then was it from Ireland to London?
Mm-mm. Ireland to Spain. I worked in the hills of Spain for a year and a bit. And then from Spain, got a job at Wimbledon Village Stables. The
you
wonderful
loved it, and you loved it there, didn't you?
Well, what's not to love, right? You've gone from working in Ireland 16, 17 hour days, 7 days a week, Spain the same, to then in Wimbledon, 8 till 5, 5 days a week, with enough salary to live in my friend's flat in London, not in a shitty trailer, and actually getting paid and then living in London with beautiful clients that buy you lots of presents and ponies. And yeah, it was nuts. So yeah, I only went to go for, I know, and I only meant to do it for 6 months because I was like, I want to compete. I want to start eventing. So I'd show jumped in Ireland up to a decent level. I was like, I want to get back. I want to get into eventing. I can show jump. And I've been schooling youngsters. I've been selling youngsters in Gore's Bridge. I'd done so much with youngsters. I was like, right, now I want to event because I'd show jumped. And I'm just going to do this. It'll get me back in the country. I'll earn a bit of money. But 6 years later, I was still there managing it.
And then after those 6 years, where did we go then? Why the change?
So I had a bit of a mental breakdown. Decided I didn't want to be teaching 24/7. This is really interesting. Like, are you sure you're not bored? Okay. So then I decided in my wisdom that I could event in the summer and be a school teacher the rest of the time. So I went and did a PGCE to become a biology A-level teacher.
Wait, so the teaching...
Oh my God, that's really cool.
The teaching you've just said that you didn't like, that was like teaching riding.
Yeah, well, no, I did love it to a point, but after 6 years, I wanted to be riding. I didn't want to be teaching 24/7.
And what was the logic of, oh, I'm going to quit this job because I don't like teaching. I know what I'll do. I'm going to study to be a teacher.
Well, my idea was that then I would earn decent money because biology teachers, immediately you get a grant and because I had my degree in biology, well, zoology, it qualified me. So I got a grant and then you get loads of holiday. So I was like, I could afford my own horse and then event all summer. This was my idea. Turns out I don't like children. So being a school teacher was not ideal. I was not a good teacher. My tolerance for kids was not. I won't say some of the things I said because it was not. But people in the staff room also did not find me funny. Apparently swearing is not allowed in staff rooms. So yes, I wasn't good at that. Had a bit of a mental breakdown. And then my old boss, Carol, who I'm still really, 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 really close with. I'm really close with all my Wimbledon Village lot. Big shout out to them. They're a fucking amazing yard. It's just one of these little heavens in the world. It's brilliant. I rang her and I was like, I can't go into the school. I hate it. The children are horrible. The teachers are horrible. I just don't want to go in. So she was like, well, why don't you just go freelance? You're good enough to freelance. You'll get enough clients. So I kind of made that decision. And then Heather, who bought Horse and Country TV, messaged me to say, did I want to come to Olympia to stand in front of a BBC camera to see what I was like presenting? So I did.
That
was scary.
I was going to say, that'd be terrifying.
I was fucking awful. I thought I was going to be sick the whole time. And I was terrible. I just looked back and I was swaying from side to side. So, but then again, I went, oh, I'll have a go. So she then asked me to go on the Horse and Country website and offered me a job 2 days a week being like the go-between. So I was writing like advice pieces. It was when Horse and Country had like a bit more like a Horse and Hound, but online, as well as the TV channel on Sky. So then I went to badminton and things like that, reporting for the website. I was writing like about what happened at events and people were writing in with questions and I was doing videos about how to ride a leg yield and all of this. Because by this point, I've got loads of BHS qualifications. I've done all my exams and I'd been riding some really nice horses in Ireland. And like I say, show jumped quite nicely. So I was doing all of this. And we went to badminton the year that Mark Todd won, 2011. And we had the iPad. I think I've told you this, Simon, before. We had an iPad. And back then, no one was vlogging. I missed a trick not doing this on YouTube, to be fair. No one was vlogging. It was the end of the press conference. Riders are all just sat around. I was wearing a really inappropriately white top as well. And look back at all the pictures and you can literally see my nipples. It's terrible. So Katie, the web editor, was like, should we go and interview them? I was like, yeah, fuck it. Let's do it. So just went, hi, Mark. I'm Jenny. Can I just do a quick interview to this? And he was like, what is that? And I'm like, it's an iPad. He's like, yeah, go on then. So I did an interview with him, Mary King, and Piggy March, well, that was French. And we worked out how to upload it to the website and embed it in the... So normally you're writing big articles. So we worked out how to put those videos instead. No one was doing this. No one was tweeting. No one was doing anything at that time. So then we went to Hickstead and we got a microphone, plugged it into the iPad and got one of those cubes. So it looks like from the video we're on a camera. We weren't, we're an iPad. We went around so many events. We did the Olympic test event, all these massive cameras. There's us with an iPad. And then after the Olympic test event, Horse and Country went, well, why don't we give you a show where you go to events doing this and call it Rudel's Roundup? So I was like, yeah. And that, but no advice, no nothing. Here's a little handheld camera.
It seems to be an ongoing theme for your life in general that you kind of learn as you go along.
Yeah, because I can't afford to go and get any qualifications.
So it's do the job first and then think about the qualifications later.
Yeah, or just say yes and then have many, many horrible sleepless nights and then hope you can blag it. There's a lot of blagging.
What would you say has been the best moment in your working life?
Ooh, television or horses?
Television.
Television. That is a good question, Simon Grieve. Did you think of that before? My best moment. Probably, do you know what? I had a chat show during the London 2012 Olympics. That was pretty cool because we had all the riders coming up to our house that we had. And that was cool, but it was a lot of pressure and a lot of work, like solid 2.5, 3 weeks, no day off, like everything relying on this show going live every single night. So it was very high pressured. And then obviously got to go on like Carl Hester's boat afterwards and things. But anyway, but I think... I'm very good friends with a lot of the para riders. I just think they're amazing. And I think, honestly, Sophie Wells is one of the greatest riders. Like, I've had a lesson with her. She is just extraordinary. And so I've always made a big push with Horse and Country to cover them as much as I can. And obviously, during the Paralympics, there's more feasibility to get in and do have more accreditation. So I was fully accredited. So I went in and made sure, like, I did pre-interviews and did loads with them. And because of that, they invited me to go to the closing ceremony of the Paralympics. And that was cool. Like, that was like, it's very, and like just sat at the Paralympics listening to Coldplay with Rihanna and being surrounded by all the athletes was just, that was like a, yeah, this is fucking cool. This is really cool.
As a presenter and an interviewer and all that kind of stuff, I kind of wonder where you kind of get the most buzz from. Is it the recognition for you, or is it you creating recognition for the rider, or is it celebrating the rider and what they've done? Or the
no, live interviews.
Done?
Live interviews at the end of big championships. That's my favourite thing.
Yeah. Because there's so much emotion there, isn't there?
Yeah. World Equestrian Games interviewing Zara Tyndall when she'd gone clear at Haraz Dapan. When she'd been to London 2012 Olympics and had a rail in the show jumping, which had cost us a bit of, we'd dropped down to silver. And then she came to the World Equestrian Games in Normandy and the track was horrific. It was thick with mud. She'd just come back from having a baby. People were questioning her selection. I was the first person to interview her in the lineup and she was buzzing. She was just buzzing. And I got to ask her questions. I can't say some of the things she said before we went live on camera because they're too rude and she was very funny. But she just that kind of proved the world that I can fucking do this. I am that good. Like, that was just brilliant. Like, stuff like that. And like Tim Price coming back and he'd like had to nurse Wesco rounds. And for him, it was like interviewing him with the relief that Wesco was okay. Like those moments that you get to see and that kind of immediate reaction that I love.
I think that's where Zara is so impressive, isn't she? In like, because I remember that. I remember when she'd had one of the babies, and she was selected. I think it was for the Olympics, wasn't it? And she was selected, and so many people were like, oh, you know, she's a bit overweight. I think was one thing that people kept on saying. She doesn't look fit enough to be able to, like, you know.
And High Kingdom, is he reliable? Blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
And it was a real like question mark over everything. And she went out and she absolutely nailed it. And so much respect for her for that.
Yeah, and also she has the pressure of the world as well. Yeah, looking at her,
because it was always when she first kind of came onto the scene, like when she was in her early 20s. And she was second at Burley, wasn't she? And she won Bramham before that, and the young riders. And a lot of our peers were like, oh, you know, she's so lucky, she has all this money spent on her, and she gets the best horses. Well, I'm not convinced that that's the truth. But even if she did, she still has to perform. And the amount of pressure she's got on her to perform is huge. And she always delivers. Well, you know, more often than not, especially in a proper championship environment. She always has, which is, I think, amazing. So would you say that one of your biggest qualities as a TV presenter and something that is really important, well, sorry, interviewer, would be to be able to think on your feet?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I love thinking of questions. And so one of my tricks is don't always want the first interview, because yes, it is great to get that initial reaction. But then the moment they ask all their questions, especially the ones who want written media, and you'll hear them go, oh, thanks very much. And then you'll hear someone like Ben Hobday turn around and go, fucking hell, I was being sick in the lorry before I went out. So then Ben gets to me and I'm like, so Ben, how were the nerves before you went out on that cross country course? Were they at a real level? And he'll go, oh yeah, Jen, I was really sick. I was thrown up in the lorry. And I know to ask the right question because I know what the answer is. So by just being a bit patient and maybe waiting or taking a rider no one wants, and I've heard them chatting to their family, you can ask questions knowing what you're going to get. Yeah. Or like, oh, they pulled a shoe, didn't they? I didn't know they pulled a shoe, but I've just heard you telling Horse and Hound to their written bit. My video goes up in like 20 minutes. Mine's live. Do you know what I mean? I look then like I've got all the info and the facts.
There's so much of it is about reading the room. And whereas I suppose, like, say someone's just won badminton and they've just come out of the ring, you literally want to pounce on them.
Yes. Like,
I want the first thing that you're gonna say, because it's gonna be that's gonna be the gold.
Yes. And cry, because that makes really good tears.
Damn it, cry.
Yeah. Really good at making people cry. Bring the tears.
It's great TV.
Yeah. It is. Oh. Yeah. I feel really hot talking about me. I'm sweating. I don't like it.
So you're just saying that you're giving us like tips if someone wanted to be a live, you know, presenter or, I don't know, interviewer. I don't know what the real word is. But so your other side, like where I've worked with you, I know you've interviewed me at events and stuff, but the production on the shows and the series and stuff that you make, that must be take a lot of brain power. Like, with the way that media and stuff has changed, like we often call it when we're even doing our live performances now, we refer to TikTok brain, in that stuff has to happen and change. It has to be, there's got to be the right music. It's got to look right. It's got to keep like moving quickly. Even like when we edit promos and stuff now, you edit them with shorter things of seconds because you know that
you've got to be able to take
TikTok brain.
Yeah, what you've got and break it into a million different things. Yeah.
And do you find that, do you like the added challenge of that? Or does it feel completely different to you from, like, say, producing a show to just getting to interview the riders at an event?
My favourite thing in the world, Benjamin Atkinson, is turning up to an event, just having to interview, and then fucking off home. If I don't have to do any other production, I love it.
You look so relaxed when you're there organising the camera crew and telling me and Jay to stop swearing so you actually have enough footage to edit.
Fuck my life. You two are the worst. So a lot of the companies I work for don't have a big budget, whereas on a normal shoot, you would have a director, a producer, a production manager. So the producer shouldn't be writing call sheets. A production manager would do that. Then you'd have a production assistant. You'd have a runner. You would have then a presenter, and then you'd have the talent, and then you'd have like four or five camera, and then you'd have a sound guy. There is normally two cameras and me, and 90% of the time I'm presenting it as well because I can't afford a different presenter. So I am having to juggle. People are like, oh, you must have loved it when you rode Velegro. When I was riding Velegro, I was director, producer and presenter for that show. And I had two camera guys and no audio. Like, so yes, it's very stressful. And I know I end up in a lot of like, especially when I'm working with influencers, I end up in their vlogs and I'm always shouting. I get so much shit from it online. Oh, she looks like a right miserable cow. I'm not miserable. I'm just really tired. that's the hard bit. Simon's had to pick me up before from crying in a trailer because I was just so exhausted and I was just so fed up because everyone's having a lovely, jolly time, but no one's helping me get a show done, which I have to get done. Otherwise, I'm going to get in trouble. And I've literally been sat in the back of a trailer just sobbing uncontrollably because I'm just so fed up of everyone just not listening. And just like, I just needed some help because I had so much going on. And I was just like, it just broke me one shoot. And then I got a shitload of abuse online because people said that I was shouting in the back of someone's vlog. But, and you just get to a point like, I know I can shout at you and Jay and we'll all go to the pub later. But when you've got a rider who's changed their plan 400 times and you're like, this is an 18-minute masterclass and they want to film for 4 hours, a very, very famous rider, like we're talking one of the most famous eventers in the world, and they've gone, oh, no, I'm just going to teach a lesson for an hour. No, no, I just need you to say something for 10 minutes.
It seems to be a thing, though, like, because I've noticed that quite a lot with any of the kind of TV stuff that I've done. They don't seem to, like, people like that don't seem to realise that we're trying to make a TV programme here. We're not, it's not about, for a change, it's not all about you.
We're not writing the Magna Carta.
You're only trying to make someone look good as well.
Yeah.
Which must be.
But also, I then get shouted at by the editors who've got 5 hours of footage for 10 minutes.
Mm.
And then they're pissed off. And then the camera crew are pissed off because they've been made to work 4 hours longer. So everyone basically is angry at me. So, yes, if I can just turn up, interview the lovely, beautiful top riders in the world and piss off again. I'm very happy. I'm a happy Jenny. Then get home in time to ride my horse.
You do enjoy producing, don't you? You do enjoy producing.
Ooh. Yes, Simon.
Ooh, that was a very long silence there. So we're not that keen on the producing side. The commentary, because you're doing a lot more commentary now, aren't you? And you're really enjoying that.
Yeah, I like the commentary. Yeah, I like the commentary. I love, again, just love watching horses doing lovely things. Like some of the horses come in and probably hate my commentary because I'm like, oh, look at that one. It's gorgeous. I want to have a go. I love the commentary. No, I do like producing, like Lights, Camera, Atkinson, like things like that. And I love doing your show, Simon. Like there's a lot of producing stuff that I love. Like, and I love it when it's been my idea. So In the Frame, I don't know if anyone remembers that show that I did for Horse and Country. It was during COVID. So we had to come up with ideas where we could only use, one camera guy. So I came up with the idea of getting riders to look back through 5 photos from their life. It turned out they brought out millions. And one of the ones we did with Katie Jerram, and actually, like, Katie Jerram, who rode for the Queen, then what's stressful is I'm like, I've only got a day to shoot this, and we could just sit here and look through her photos for 6 hours. And I'm like, shit, no, can we wrap this up? But what was amazing, she was pulling out letters she'd had from the Queen and the Christmas gifts that she never used because the Queen gave them to her. And this letter that she got when the horse had died, and I almost want to cry now. It was just after the Queen had died and it was so emotional. And David Broome, and a lot of people listening to this won't know who David Broome is, but in my eyes, he's the only Brit to win a world championships in show jumping. He's been to the Olympics and his stories of the Olympics. And he was crying after he's telling us about his horse dying. And I'm like, oh my God, this is when I love producing because it's such a privilege to be sharing these moments with these people. And what I find sad is our sport doesn't always appreciate riders and the athletes and the history of the sport. A lot of people just quite rightly want to just enjoy their horses. Maybe watch some influencers playing with their ponies because that's what they can relate to. And I understand that. Like, I understand that people want to watch that. But in my mind, that, like, David Broome is a legacy and he's amazing. And I did it with Lucinda Green and she bought out her, like, Pony Club C-Test certificate. And, like, she was crying about a horse that had died in the arena at badminton. It, like, had a heart attack and died. And what these riders have been through to get to the Olympic stage. So David Broome won Spotty, won Sports Personality of the Year. He turned up in his hay truck because he used to deliver his bales around the country, turned up, parked outside the BBC studios, went in, won Sports Personality of the Year, and then got back in his truck, carried on delivering hay. So it's that's when I love producing, when you hear stuff like that and like just, I've got to stop saying the word like on this podcast, by the way. I must be really annoying people.
It's also you've got this kind of this little idea in your head, and you're like, well, I think we'll have a go at that. And then it rolls and rolls, and then it turns into this really fucking cool program where you're like talking to like legends of the sport about how it's all, and you get them emotional. Oh, that must be a really cool thing to like to do.
Yeah. And you get some fun, like we were filming in at Princess Anne's because we used the back of Gatcombe before we filmed with Mark and Peter Phillips. And Anne had gone out in a helicopter and we were told we were allowed to film by Peter, but Peter hadn't told his security. So we're flying a drone over Gatcombe House and suddenly we see a man in black running down the hill towards my cameraman. And I turned around to Peter Phillips' PA and I was like, should we be doing anything right now? And she was like, yeah, I think we should just run. It's like, oh! because she was like, how fast can your camera guys move? I was like, oh my God. So moments like that, I just love. I'm like, wow, we're going to get attacked, but we'll work it out.
Well, they were obviously really on it that night, because that day. Can you remember when somebody stole a horse from Gatcombe?
I know. That was years ago.
Someone just drove in with a horse box, stole a horse, and then drove off. Like, past all the security cameras, all the security people, no one even knew.
Someone's in a horse box. They must be here.
Do you guys never think that would be the easiest thing to do ever at any show?
Absolutely. So easy.
The first time I've seen it, Jenny's looking like, oh dear, boys. No, but like, when we're
in
Ireland...
Let's not give people ideas.
It's the first time I saw it. They down the Irish draft stallions. They were all padlocked in their stables. They'd put chains around and padlocked them in so that no one could get into the stable. Because I've always thought...
Well, space the stallions as well.
Yeah, but if you wanted to nick something from a show, all you need is a lycra hood, a rug... And to walk confidently, like, do you know what I mean? No one's, if you just saw a random person loading a horse, you'd probably help them. It won't go on. Oh, it's one hand.
They'd be like, can you get that Ben guy? He's really good with difficult horses. And you'd be like, yeah, go on, I'll do you. Yeah, I'll teach it to bow while I'm here. That one's on me.
The one day that I'll be like, because I avoid that like the plague. If I see someone struggling with a horse, I'll be like watching. And then George is like, no, don't get kicked for free. Like, stay away from it. And you can guarantee the one day that I'd be like, would you like help loading this horse? It'd be on the news the next day, wouldn't it? Ben Atkinson helps horse theft.
Is that like, you know, when someone's a doctor and people go to them and go, oh, can I just ask you about this mole? Is that like, oh, I've got a difficult horse. Can I just ask you, what should I do if they don't load? Or what should I do if they kick me when I go in the stable?
Sometimes I'll get a text from George because I'll stay in my little caravan when we're at shows. And I'm in the caravan and she'll send me a text saying, don't move, stay quiet. Because there'll be someone outside. We just wanted to ask Ben if he'd come and help us load this pony. And she's like, oh, he's not here at the moment. I don't know where he is. Hidden. Because she knows that like, I'll say yes, and then I'll get like rope burned and get my head kicked in.
You see, I just would never ask that. Like, it's a bit like one of my really good friends is a vet, and my dad was a vet. And people, they're always asking, aren't they? They're like, oh, will you just come and look at this? Or can you? It's like, no, he's not working. What the hell? People just don't care, do they? They just ask away.
And no one ever asked me like that. Would you just come and talk to me about my cat and interview me? Like, no, I'm all right.
I don't know. I think
you talk in a very professional manner about how amazing my cat is. Well, yes, I actually can. Your cat is absolutely splendid.
You say that.
Mr. Pickles.
I think I've rung you before, Jenny, and been like, I could do to be a bit more in the public at the moment, Jen, and I've not got a lot on. Do a show. Come on.
Yes, and actually saying that, Simon, how many times have you sent me a showreel or asked for advice on doing more TV stuff?
Yeah, I've done that loads.
Yeah, I get riders as well that I know who are like, can you come and help me just make a video because I need to sell a horse? Or what should I do to get more into commentary? Yeah, Ben King, he messaged me.
My mate, who's a vet, he's a really good friend, really close friend. And I say that to him. I say, oh, God, it's so annoying when people ring you up to ask you about, like... And he's like, yeah, but I'd far rather you did, because you're my friend.
Oh, yeah, it's different when it's a friend, I think.
We speak all the time, so that's fine. It's when it's random, not random, but people he doesn't really speak to very much. So, like, they just ring up kind of because they're being cheeky, basically.
Yeah, I always think if I hear from someone who would never normally contact me and they start with a favour, I'm like, I never hear from you any other time.
Or those phones that were those contacts that when you see their name pop up, you're like, oh, I wonder what I'm being asked to do. Here we go.
Yeah, don't press it because then it's gone to two blue ticks and they know you've read it.
Oh, I'm the worst. If I know people are like that, I just block them. Because you know you can block contacts off your phone as well, just block numbers. And if, like, I used to have quite a few people, sounds awful, doesn't it? Who I know I just don't get on with. And they would call me and it'd be awkward. So now they're just blocked, so they think my phone's dead all the time.
Or you died. Yeah. Something happened to Ben. I do enjoy the way that I'm not looking like the bad person in this part of the podcast, because I think I'm always the angry sounding rude one. So I think now this has saved me a little bit that Ben Atkinson blocks people on his phone that he doesn't like. Yes, he's not that nice.
Yeah, absolutely fair.
Actually, my biggest takeaway is that you, as you were telling us, you know, how to get interviews with good riders, wear a inappropriate white shirt, and then all the top riders want to be interviewed by you the moment they come out the ring.
I've had some pretty suspect outfits in my time, I tell you, but that first badminton was pretty up there. I'll put, if anyone asks, I'll send you a picture on the old Instagram. Oh my God, it's so bad, it's so tight. What was I thinking? I wouldn't even fit in it now.
You were smuggling raisins.
I was smuggling more than raisins, I tell you. It was just, yeah, raisins would be a compliment to my boobs.
So, Ben, is there anything that that we haven't asked that you would like to ask Jenny?
Don't give me evils. I don't know.
Side eye.
I mean, now you're at the position you're at within, you know, oh no, maybe that's a shit question. Now I've thought
about
it.
What was the
question? Because I was going to say, it started with a love of all animals, just all animals. And like you said, David Attenborough and all of that sort of thing. And then you went into the presenting and then you got the chance to produce. Have you ever thought that you would like to now take the skills and contacts that you've got and push into that world a bit? You know, try and get involved with more nature and that, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, that's a really good question.
Well, it would have been if she hadn't told us that she doesn't like being a producer. Then, yeah.
We could edit that out.
No, I do like being a producer. I just am a bit fed up of being a producer, director, like production manager, assistant, runner. I would love to be a producer on a show where I had a bit of a better budget and help. Because I'm just exhausted doing that many roles. I think that's the difference. But yes, is the answer to the question. And I have tried that, Benjamin. I had a showreel. I had an agent. I had the same agent as, what's his name? The grumpy one on Strictly. Craig Revel Hall. Yeah, we had the same agent and lots of EastEnders characters. He loved me. He saw my showreel and was like, yeah, I want to take you on, because he loved the countryside as well, my agent. Put me in front of loads of things. I had a top ITV people look at my showreel. And because my showreel was a bit different to most people, because it was actual work that I'd done, a lot of showreels are people's of just faking it, or they've gone on a course, presenting course. And I put music to it, and I'd done it myself with my friends, Jackie, who works at Cavewood. Jackie and Tim, they helped me out doing it. And in return for them doing my showreel, I had to do some really weird gig for them when I was presenting on a building site. I was like, oh, fucking come on, that is boring. But yes, so I did my showreel, and honest to God, I got amazing feedback. I had to sit in with producers and do Channel 4 had got the racing at that point. And so they wanted to put me forward for that. And I was like, I don't know anything about racing. I don't want to be one of those presenters who people hate because I get it wrong. So I didn't actually go for that. But Countryfile, all of these things, and they were like, your showreel's amazing. You're really good in front of camera. Like, it was so complimentary, but there was a but. Do you know what that but is? I sound too English. I sound too posh.
Oh, really?
I am as the opposite of diverse, and I don't even have an accent. Like, if I was from Wales, I'm just Southern. So if I had a Scottish accent or anything, they were all like, we've already got Ellie Henderson on Countryfile. She's basically you, just a smaller, prettier version. But yeah, so I was like, basically told, don't even bother. So I then just pushed more in the horse world. It was very deflating.
That's pretty soul destroying.
It was very soul destroying. Honestly, I've had some really lovely people as well being like, you should push. But we both know Lee McKenzie. I mean, she is so good at her job and sport and like amazing and all these amazing sports presenters. And I think I could have gone down the sports route. But when I had my kids already in the horse world, I was working for the Global Championship Tour. I was doing loads of British show jumping, British dressage. Like I was doing all the British dressage live events. I was working for Horse and Country as a producer and a presenter. When I got married in May, the last weekend in May, I then didn't have another weekend off until the last weekend in October, as well as working in the week. And then when I had my kids, you have to make a decision. Like I know other presenters who within a week are back at a show. And don't get me wrong, I did Burley with James I did badminton with you, Simon, do you remember? And Delilah was 6 weeks old. And I did do a few of them, but I made a decision. I can either really push and get my sports career, like, and really try and do other sports and cricket. And Jonathan Agnew said he would help me and things like that. Or I can be a mum and carry on and Horse and Country and produce and be behind the camera and do roles that I can do in the week. Because let's face it, all sport is at the weekend. If I want to be a sports journalist, I have to work nights and weekends. And that's not conducive to seeing your kids grow up, in my opinion. So yeah. I made a decision to just solely, I was doing the Global Champions Tour when James was like 9 months old. So I did go away quite a lot for that year, but I couldn't do it once Delilah was born. So yeah, I would say my career massively went when I had kids. And also I just didn't enjoy being in front of camera because I look back at Blenheim. I did Blenheim live when James was 2 months old and I looked like a house. And I was like, oh my God, it's just I look like I ate old me. So producing fitted more of my lifestyle, but it has kind of scuppered me now because you can't it's just the way life is. But I don't regret it because I've seen my kids every weekend and grow up, and I've been away from them a lot as it is.
Because you did say that, didn't you? You said when you, just before you moved to Canada, you said, actually, this is a really, part of this is because I want to be able to see my kids grow up and be with them properly. And you have done that and you have kind of delivered on that, what you wanted to do. And, you know, and all credit to you for that.
Yeah. And I've had to take a lot of jobs over here because it was more expensive living here than we were expecting. And obviously doing lots of commentary at Thunderbird and traveling. And I've just got back from Kentucky. So it has been pretty stressful. I was away for most of November. But then I was like, right, if I'm away for most of November, that pays for December. So I can spend December with my kids and do Christmas.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're going to find out soon, Benji.
Well, I was going to say, I've actually already completely changed. I can't go into detail with it all yet, but I've completely changed a lot of my plans for the next year, at least, that were already set. And a lot of people are quite disgruntled and stuff, but that's life, because one of the biggest conversations, because obviously, as well as performing, I've done a lot of film and TV stuff with the horses. And very often when we're talking to like the stuntmen and stuff who are our mates that do it, when I've bespoken to them about having a baby, they've said, your career will matter less to you in the future than the fact that you only saw your kid through FaceTime. They were like, don't be a dad through FaceTime. It's not worth it. They were like, so many of them have done so similar as what you've said. They've gone from earning 100K a week on the new Game of Thrones to being the bloke that falls over in EastEnders. But they're like, do you ever find that with work, with all of this? It's like, you get on the hamster wheel of progression. If I do this, then I get the next job. I do this. And then every so often you'll step back and be like, hang on, I'm chasing a dream, but what about my actual life? Do you know, what about my actual daily quality of life? Or am I chasing this goal to make other people think I'm cool? And actually all I'm doing is making my own life really bloody hard.
I think when you step back, you can see that. Like when I'm on the beach with my kids, it's like, oh, fucking love it. But then I'll go and do, so say, for example, a job in America, and I'm there just making social media videos. And in my head, I'm like, I was at the bloody London Olympics with a chat chef. And now I'm making social media videos, chasing round riders, carrying a tripod in fucking million degree heat. and like the riders don't want to talk to me. And I'm chasing, like the other day I had to interview a 17-year-old about a bloody scholarship she'd won. And the 17-year-old was saying to me, oh, can I just do it tomorrow? I'm a bit busy. I'm like, oh, I'm now chasing round after a 17-year-old who like to get a video for some. And I'm like, oh my God, this is soul crushing. But I have to remember it pays the bills so I can spend time with my kids. And there's often days where I cry and go, oh, but I'm doing it for my kids.
I do think you're right, Ben, because you do, you get so kind of carried away, don't you, with I need to be better, I need to do this, I need to do that in order to be able to progress to that. And you completely forget about everything else that's important. And I think actually having kids, because you were like that as well, Jenny, before you had the kids, and now you've had the kids, they kind of make you have to think like that, which actually is probably a good thing. I mean, I'm never going to have that. So, like, I'm going to just continue with the hamster wheel thing. But, like, although I've got my dog. But, yeah, so, like, but you're on this constant, I've got to get better, but it just makes you stop. And Piggy March was the same, wasn't she? Sorry.
I was just saying, could I ask a question then? Because obviously you have children. I'm about to, about next year, we'll have our baby. One thing that I'm quite looking forward to, and maybe I'm naive, is some days my entire life is my horses and what I do with my horses. And so some days if I go to the yard or I'm at an event and it all goes wrong with the horses, I can feel quite worthless. Because all I've done is put all my eggs in this one basket and today it was all terrible. So you just, what have you been doing? Whereas at least I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, well, but now I'm having a baby now. So I could go to Hoys or Olympia or WEG or whatever and perform and do terribly and then come out the ring and hold my child who's having the best day and just think, oh, actually, there's something more important. Like it doesn't actually, in the grand scheme of life, it doesn't matter that much that that went that way. And I felt a bit embarrassed because I might not be a very good horseman today, but I'm still a good dad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but then they wake up and throw up on you at 3 o'clock in the morning and you wish you were back at fucking Hoys falling off a horse.
I had this a little bit, but with my dog.
Oh, gorgeous girl. Like, it's not naff. She's amazing.
I did badminton 1 year and it didn't go very well. And I had to walk home, walk of shame. And actually I got back to the stables bit and I was just about to go through the big arch and my mum came running over. Mum didn't have any passes or anything, so she came running over. She said, I wanted to catch you before you got back because I know exactly what you're thinking. You're thinking you're rubbish and worthless and that you can't do it anymore. And I was like, that's exactly what I've been thinking. And she's like, well, you mustn't. Because you're really good and you're amazing. And she was typically fantastic. Anyway, so then I went through and I kind of got off the horse and washed off and did whatever. And then I went back to the lorry and I was on my own, feeling quite flat. And then my dog was there and I was like, I'm going to have to take you for a little walk because, you know, she's been in the lorry for ages. So we went off and you know where the lorry park used to be? There's the cricket pitch. And it was dead quiet. And she just went bounding off, like having the best time. And I was just like, there's quite a lot more to it than this, isn't it? You know, like, if she can find, like, pleasure in this kind of stuff, then I need to get a grip on myself. Sorry, that was a very silly story, but...
That wasn't a silly story, it was a nice story. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's about seeing the bigger picture and being, actually, I got to actually walk back from badminton with my legs intact and trying to find the positives, which isn't always easy to do.
So, and it's been very enjoyable to be able to talk a little bit about Jenny on the Jen Pod. Loving it. We'll have to do another one soon. Anybody wanting to hear more from Jenny, just let us know. And if you can, like, follow, subscribe, et cetera, whatever it is that you're supposed to do. And there's only one thing left for me to say, and that is Jenny Rudel, shut up and ride.